cost per mile on all of the different roads throughout the tollway system. Be happy to share that with you, as well as some of the reasoning behind the tolling pricing on each segment of our system.
Thank you. That I appreciate.
All right. Any other new business to come before us? It's my understanding we have no executive session. So with that, we are going to go back.
So you need to leave.
So I think, and I apologize, but I have to leave for something that was unplanned. We'll proceed to our Customer Service and Planning Committee work plan. And Greg, maybe you can kind of guide us. You've had a lot of guidance experience. So, and I apologize for having to go. And thank you all very much.
Thank you. All right. Rocco will be giving our presentation on the 2016, 2015, 2017 Customer Service and Planning Committee work plan for this committee.
And this is a presentation, but also more of a discussion as well, because what we, and maybe I could kind of give you some of the background on how the things that we've talked about at this committee in the past. The Customer Service and Planning Committee was really started, I don't know, maybe in 2012 or so. So we've covered a lot of things over the last several years, and what we want to do is kind of think about the items that Director Johnson just brought up. What kind of things should we be talking about with this committee? Few of the items that we talked about in past years, just to kind of give you a very brief update. We've updated the tollway noise policy back in 2012. We've adopted a tollway interchange policy, I believe also in 2012. I-90 transit planning. We've done regular updates on the different quarter planning councils that we have and mayor's meetings that we have on Elgin O'Hare, on 53-120, which you heard today, 294-57 in the past, and I-90. The green initiatives that we've incorporated in some of our projects, in particular the 9047 interchange on Huntley. We've talked about the sign policy, so the signs that you see on our system, that was part of prior discussions. We've addressed some landscape policies, active traffic management on I-90, some commercial vehicle strategic planning work was done through this committee. Sustainability was discussed at some point in time. Commercial vehicle performance, we evaluated what happened after the tolls increased at the beginning of 2015. So always continuous monitoring of things that are going on. And then the excess right-of-way and annexation policy. So these items, just my general thoughts about things what this committee may want to discuss, or if there's other things that we could incorporate, that would be terrific as well. But I kind of looked at what's happening now at the agency, what we need to do maybe over the initial 6 months, and things that we should be maybe looking at the first half of next year, and then a little bit further beyond. A lot of these thoughts are really kind of timed with what's happening with the Move Illinois program. Two things right off the bat. In the first 6 months, the Elgin O'Hare business rules, which you've, you know, tackling that now, the access right-of-way and annexation policy, which I'll cover as the next presentation, where we are with that and where we want to go, just make sure you understand where we are. These are some other things that that are out there for potential discussion in the future. The tollway's role in regional project development, CMAP, the Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, is updating their 2040 plan right now. They plan to have the 2040 plan approved in October of 2018, so they're starting the engagement process now. So it's really thinking about what the tollway role should be today and what we should be looking at is maybe some of these other future regional projects. A lot of the Move Illinois program is based on the CMAP 2040 plan as it is today. The Elgin O'Hare project, what we're doing on I-90, 294-57. So some of those major projects we're tackling right now really came through some of through CMAP. Cost sharing policies, you know, you're starting to see more agreements that are coming to the board, to the committees for approval. We've adopted some cost sharing arrangements with various projects. We established kind of a framework for what we would do on the Elgin O'Hare Western Access project. We've also done some stuff on the I-90 corridor. Maybe it makes sense to really look at cost sharing as a broader vision of what we should define as what a tollway base cost is, what some of these additional costs are for aesthetics, landscaping, bike, pedestrian access, and whatnot as we go through other projects. Again, tollway, long-range vision. What is it that this committee would like to talk about and discuss over the next, again, what should we be?
Rocco?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. On the cost sharing, has it been pretty popular? I know you worked with our town.
Mm-hmm.
And we love what happened on Devon Avenue. We've had so many compliments. It's unbelievable how people like the aesthetics that was done in a part. How's that going with other towns? Has that gone well with you? I mean, has it been well received with other communities and entities?
Hit miss, to be honest with you. You know, these are small, and I think you've got, I've spoken to your administrator there, and you get it, that these are small cost improvements that are there for 50 years, so it's an opportunity to really stamp something on your community.
Or the bridge in your community.
Yeah. Right.
I cannot tell you how many people have said, boy, why can't we have everything look like that? Why can't all, I mean, it's been a great investment on our behalf. And I'm just hoping we can be like a poster child for, I mean, it's a win-win. I mean, it helps you folks and it helps the communities immensely.
At the beginning of every single project that we take on, it's one of the point-blank questions that we ask. This is your opportunity, Community X, to do something special in your town. Is there any interest? You know, continue to try to pull it out of them. Is there any interest in doing things? And then what we find is, you know, at some point in time, it almost gets to be too late. So what this might be is an opportunity to make it very clear. That's what always helps. A very clear policy to say, here's what the tollway will cover. Here's what you, the local community, needs to cover. A lot of times, I think the resistance is that we're pretty aggressive on our schedules and implementation schedules, and we knock on your door and we say, okay, we're here. We need money for these additional enhancements. And it's not the money that shies them away. It's the immediacy on the payment. So that's something that we've tried to be cooperative with these local agencies about. How soon do they have to pay us back? I think that's what the resistance is, though.
Well, we should work with, because I think it's a big benefit. I just came back from Wisconsin, and they're doing, even though it's freeways up there, mm-hmm. if you go by some of the towns up there, they're starting to do the same thing.
Through Madison.
And mm-hmm. what a difference. Mm-hmm. I mean, it does make a huge difference for just people feel better. I mean, they go through it, they enjoy it. I know Shaman's doing more of that now
right.
along their work. So maybe it's the way we can market it. I hate to say marketing, but we almost maybe should market it differently to get more towns to do it. Because, I mean, to me, it's a win for everyone. And it's a great opportunity. And so, like you say, Rocco, it's a once-in-a-50-year opportunity to really make a positive impact. Mm-hmm. And I'm shocked. You know, you don't expect people to be excited about it, but the number of people who have come up and said something, it blew me away how much they looked at it. So
glad to hear that. That's great.
Oh,
that
feeds great. I am too. I mean, I'm looking forward to the ones we're doing on 90 at Oakton and Bussey
right.
and Ironton Road. I can't wait to get those done.
The other part on the cost sharing, where you know this, it's your once in a lifetime opportunity, and we really try to pull this out. And some, you know, some jump on, some can't. It's sidewalks and pedestrian access. It's those bridges that go over the tollway or under the tollway. It's your opportunity to really put something in there. It's not going to be our long term maintenance responsibility. It's an additional cost of the project, but. You know, it really does, as you could appreciate, connects communities if you don't have that. So those are some of the cost-sharing things that we get involved with a lot. But I think where my personal experience with it now, going through with what we're seeing on Elgin O'Hare, I-90, on the tri-state projects that we've done in the past, it's that the speed of our program kind of catches these communities off guard because you know, it's the budgeting aspect of it all. That's kind of tough for them. We're here, next thing you know, they need to pay several hundred thousands of dollars sometimes.
Well, maybe we can look at some kind of plan to help them. If that's a thing stop them, maybe we should look at some kind of way to work with them to give them the opportunity to still participate and something to look at down the road.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So that was, you know, one thing. So, again, totally long-range vision. Freight accommodation planning. We've done a commercial vehicle plan for the tollway itself. You know, what's next with that? We've kicked off a truck parking study on the system. What should we be doing? Trucking is a major component of everything that we need to consider here on our system. So, again, what other things should we be thinking about for freight as we go through all of our projects? But I would say in particular on the Central Tri-State, which is one of the major freight corridors, not just here in the tollway, but in Illinois and really in the nation with all the amount of freight that goes up and down there and across it. More thoughts about here. Industry benchmarking performance measures. How do we stack up against other agencies? Is there something that other agencies are doing right now, you know, that we should be looking at more? Customer service, I guess, you know, what I think is let's define who the customer is. We've got a lot of different customers on the roadway. It's not just the person who drives on the road every single day. It's the person who occasionally drives on it for a work or business trip. It's that tourism or the infrequent visitor. If one of our customers, a freight is a customer, what services are we providing today? I know Star 99 is always a success for us, as are the help trucks. Are there other customer service needs that we should be, or other roadway services that we should be considering? The OACs, well, that's always something that's out there, and we've got a long-term arrangement with the with the Oasis vendors right now, but is there something that we should be looking at from the Oasis itself of different uses of it? And then a little bit longer term, say 12 plus months out, transit and land use planning, you know, after I-90 is complete at the end of 2016, you know, we'll have some transit use along the corridor, more dedicated transit use, and some park and ride facilities. So what else should this agency be looking at from a transit and land use planning perspective? How do we kind of encourage more economic development or wise land use planning along the roadway? And then, you know, any other opportunities for supplemental revenue exploration? You know, we've got some land out there. You know, access policy is one way to generate some additional revenue. We've got towers. We've got utilities within our cores. Is there ways and other things that we might want to do with this agency to look at some additional revenue opportunities? I said these are just some of my thoughts based on what we've talked about in the past. If there's other things, Director Johnson, I think you bring up a good point, too, about the tolling, and, you know, and the prior discussion. Let's look at the system-wide analysis. That's one of the other things we'll put on. And what this will give us the opportunity, though, is to make sure that our staff can have the adequate amount of time to prepare the materials that will help provide some fruitful discussion here with this committee. So if there's any other items, things that we think we want to cover as a committee.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Rocco. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We have one more presentation, and Rocco, I believe, will give this presentation
as well.
Yeah,
let's get some notes on this one really quick. This is an access right-of-way and annexation policy. We have been developing this, I'm going to say, pretty much over the last year. And we really never had a formalized process. We're allowed to dispose of access right-of-way through the Toll Highway Act and through the trust indenture itself. I just want to give you an overview of what we've done to date and what we're doing on this right now. There's no immediate urgency to adopt this policy. With all policies, what we've been doing is doing we put them out for public comment. Typically, it's a 21-day public comment period. With the access right-of-way and annexation policy, we put it out for a 60-day public comment period. We really wanted to engage some feedback, and particularly, you know, in some of these the corridors where we're building some new roads, the Elgin O'Hare, 294, 57. We wanted to make sure that there was clear feedback where we know we've been talking with a lot of communities over years. So we do have the authorization through, again, the Toll Highway Act and the Trust Indenture to dispose of access right-of-way. It's access because maybe we had to acquire it. It's a non-economic remnant. We had to maybe buy the front half of the property, which included, we'll say, a building or whatever it might be, so we end up having to buy the whole. So we only needed the front half of the property, but the back half sometimes is the uneconomic remnant for the original property owner, which we acquire, which could in turn be deemed excess. Sometimes we will we acquire a property, but over years, you know, with some of the interchange reconfigurations that we go through, we see that since we've changed the design, we no longer need the property, or we eliminated the need for it. There's other opportunities when there's changes in zoning or land use. There's land that we've had to acquire for buffers, if you will, from a school or a residential area or whatever it might be. If that land use changes or the school, which has happened in the past, goes away, we now find ourselves saying we've got some potential excess land. So there's, you know, a couple different opportunities where we see excess land. Because everything that we do on excess right-of-way and annexation is really guided by the Act and the indenture. Typically what it's been, though, has been a reactive approach. We've been very gung-ho on moving forward with the congestion relief program, which was the prior capital program, and now the Move Illinois program. So staff has basically just been reacting to requests that come in. We haven't had really a formal policy to develop to provide a guideline. What we would like to, what we get a lot from communities is say, tell me what the process is. So what we want to do is make it very clear to anybody who asks about a right-of-way what the process is. So we were pretty much reactive in the past. The different ways we could get rid of access right-of-way today, you could do it via an intergovernmental agreement between public agencies. We could do a sealed bid if there's a private entity who says, do you have, is this particular piece of land access? We go through an evaluation committee with internal staff. Then there's a specific access right-of-way committee. We would request that, well, it's mandated that any land that we get rid of is disposed of at the fair market value, as determined by an appraiser. but ultimately it lands here at the board for approval of it. But we're suggesting a few different policy changes. When we had the discussion with some of the local communities, with the customer service committee in the past, I believe last time we talked about this was maybe about a year or so ago, not even. There was a desire to be a little bit more open and helpful to local governments to help develop and really promote economic development. So a lot of what the policy that we're adopting right now, I believe was provided to you, reflects a lot of the external feedback that we've received to date from both the customer service committee, some of the local communities that we've been dealing with and talking with us about over the last several years. One of the some of the prior directors, the goal was to make sure that the policy is flexible and not restrictive, to really give us the ability to kind of to support local government, not be so darn prescriptive that we can't figure out how to support some of these local government needs. So we try to make the policy kind of flexible in the way we approach public agencies. We want to make sure it's a clear and documented process. But really one of the big things that we're asking for is an indication of how this sale of access right-of-way is in the best use of the public interest. It does enable a direct sale to a public entity for a public road, a park, or some kind of multi-use path. But then also for economic development. We want to make sure that, again, supporting local communities and their economic development. Believe it or not, we do have some fairly large parcels of land that are excess today or maybe excess in the future. Again, through the 294-57 project, now we're seeing it with Elgin O'Hare, we're realizing that, hey, there's some opportunities here on some of these larger parcels of land. But what we're asking for as part of the new policy is a clear indication of how a sale of this land, whether it be to the public agency, to a private agency, how the land's going to be used. Is it for residential purpose, which we don't really particularly like, because that just might cost or provide some additional impacts on us later? Is it for some form of economic development? What's the impact on traffic on our system? What's the impact of operations and things like that? So this is a little bit new that we're making it clear that we want to have the requesting agency give us a lot more information about how the land will be used in the future. Do some traffic analysis for us so we don't find ourselves in a position where it's costing us more later. But that onus will be put on the requesting agency to provide that study as we see fit. As like I said, traffic operations, how it's going to be used, an economic impact analysis. When they say this is for economic purposes, we'd like to see what that economic impact analysis is to make sure, again, that local community is also supportive of this type of development. We don't want to find ourselves in the middle of that. And then billboard restrictions. That's something very clearly that we've put in into this policy is billboard restrictions. Anytime we sell excess land, the party has to agree not to build or cause to build any billboard on this property or any structure that's going to interfere with tollway operations. So there's some restricted uses on how the land will be used, but we'll have better indications as opposed to just a sealed bid sale or a direct intergovernmental agreement.
How's that billboard restriction gone? Has that been a problem for you with some?
No, because they know what they're going to get into when we sell the property. We really haven't sold much excess in the last, 4 to 5 plus years or so of any sizable amounts. We've had a couple annexations requests over the last couple years that we move forward with. But billboards ultimately have to get approved by IDOT anyway. So we don't have a say on any of that. So we want to make it abundantly clear no billboards will be allowed on any of these properties, or if there's some form of a sign or other structure that's going to impede operations on our system. So, again, don't know, but we want to make it very clear. If you're looking for property, there is going to be a restriction on how it will be used.
Why a restriction against billboards? Is it? I know we've talked about this for years, and this has gone back and forth. But are we painting the entire system with one brush, saying no billboards on excess property?
On our excess property, that's the intent. Yeah, just to kind of say here, across the board, no additional billboards. That's something up for discussion. You know, the billboards always become a discussion topic for many reasons, pluses and minuses on it. We don't get any revenue from the billboards, you know, when they're on their system. I know that's always something. Well, how come we don't get that? It's our hundreds of thousands of, you know, customers a day that drive through these corridors, seeing the billboards. This is kind of where we thought we would go with on the billboards. Again, billboard, the installation of a billboard is really not up to us. Ultimately, the Department of Transportation has say on, and actually it's the Department of Transportation in Springfield that has say on any new billboards that are put up throughout the entire state. So
in some communities, like we prohibit billboards in our town, and we got all 90, yeah, nice long quarter, 90. Mm-hmm. In other areas, Elgin here, we don't allow it. Mm-hmm. We're probably one of the few communities we have no billboards. We don't allow them.
And displays your neighbor community does.
Yeah,
they've got a restricted.
That's what I was asking about. That I was wondering.
They have restricted numbers in different communities. So you know, we just say if there's excess property, there's a billboard restriction on use of that property. Try to have more discussion about that to see if it makes sense or not.
I think there should be because you know for 20 some years that I've been here, we've touched on it. It's come up and we've always sort of just done the same thing. We've never, to my mind, had an advertising policy here.
So you're in support of putting in the billboard restriction?
I'm not necessarily in support of it. I mean nothing.
No. As long as you protect the community's interest, I know it's you can't override a community's local jurisdiction. Like if you bought access land and private developer in Elk Grove that boards the tollway, but Elk Grove restricts billboards in this community, as long as our laws are protected, I'm fine. I have no problem with other towns want to do that. That's not my jurisdiction. I just want to make sure, that's what I asked about, make sure that our authority is not being usurped. That's the only thing.
The local authority.
Right, local authority, right.
My thinking is that in some locations, absolutely, they're inappropriate. In others, I think they are appropriate. And I don't think it's any secret. My law firm does represent billboard mm-hmm. companies, and obviously I'm not advocating for anyone in particular, but I do know a little bit about the industry, and I think that in certain areas they work, in other areas they don't. And again, I don't know how this, I know over the years board members have been supportive of advertising and other board members have been against. But it's never really been debated at this board.
No, it hasn't.
Maybe sure. I say I'm not against them, just so we understand. I'm not against them, as long as we protect the municipality's jurisdictional control.
So there's written now, as there's one paragraph in the policy that speaks specifically to the billboard restrictions. If I send it out, again, this is a draft policy. What we've tried to do, again, you've been involved in this for 20 years, we get a lot of requests. We haven't ever really had the clear path to say, here's what you need to do and right. Here's how it can be used. That was our goal, is to make it clear for anybody who asked, go through the same. Here's what you need to do. Here's the timeline. Here's what we expect of you. So there's one paragraph. That's all it is, and maybe that's up for you know for input. Again, from I appreciate the comments on this. You know, we put it out there for that specific reason to try to get some feedback from these local communities.
Again, it seems like a lot of us have been here for a long time. It seems like every 4 or 5 years, it sort of comes up and mm-hmm. then it dies real quick. The whole advertising.
Yeah,
issue.
It does. You know, then when they're so close to us sometimes, if we need to do something, it's pretty costly to pay it and move them as well. So if we want to, you know, revisit the language, now is the time. Again, this is a draft policy. We don't have to make any actions right now. What we actually have been doing, just so you know, while the policy's in draft, we've still been moving forward with the different access requests that we have, an annexation request. We've been following the guidance of the policies to kind of guide our actions from a staff perspective, so it hasn't gotten in the way yet. So this allows us, again, to continue to pilot and try things out. But the billboard thing has not come up, I'm going to say, in the last couple of years because we haven't gotten rid of any excess. So I'll send that paragraph around for additional input. That'd be terrific. It's one small paragraph in the policy. I'll send you the entire, you will have the entire policy, but I'll point out the specific.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. And I'll thank you. So the next steps on the policy is, again, incorporating the feedback, as I'm asking, as you're talking about today. What I want to do is reconvene with those agencies who did comment on the policy, which was DuPage County, Naperville, Naperville Development Partnership, Tues DuPage, Itasca, Bensonville, and Wooddale have all provided some comments. We want to bring these commenting agencies back to share some of our changes from the feedback that we received from them. There are a few things that they requested that we haven't necessarily incorporated verbatim. One of those was right of first refusal for the local government agency to have that right of first refusal on the property. We again try to keep the policy as flexible as possible. We don't have that right now. But what we're looking for, instead of saying right of first refusal, it was the opportunity. Tell us how it's going to benefit the public. What are the public policy considerations? So getting that feedback on, and then, you know, that's the opportunity to make sure that the local communities are fine with this, but not going so far as to say, public agency, you have the first opportunity to property. It was something that was suggested. We tried to keep instead of being so prescriptive on the policy, we wanted to be flexible. Because when you're prescriptive, you can appreciate,
I can see why the communities are saying that. I understand. Mm-hmm. Okay. I see both sides. I know what you're saying.
Right. So this is where something that we're doing is different, is asking how the land's going to be used, what's the economic development perspectives, what are the policy, public policy considerations that have to go into place. We could seek public agency approval of the use. I don't know if that's the right way to go. Again, we just try to be flexible without being prescriptive overall.
But looking like what Director Banks said, if we review the billboard thing, that may be something we look and do, but also respective to the community, whether it's allowed or not. That makes sense what you're saying.
Okay. So that'll be the next step. We want to reconvene with these commenting agencies, those seven entities that comment, to kind of share some of the where we are with the policy. My plan has always been to try to get this policy adopted and finalized by the end of this year. What I was shooting for originally was sometime mid-2015, but I think it's fine. It's not stopping us from any of the work that's necessary from, like I said, the annexations. We've approved 2 annexation requests using this policy as a guideline. Historically, we haven't gotten involved with annexations, so we've used the policy as a way to move forward. But then, you know, what I'm looking at is maybe sometime in November, adopting the policy as formal adoption of the policy. It could go into next year, that's fine as well. But it would be nice, again, to have that very clear path for everybody that's out there. And really the driving force on it is, we know right now we've got access right away 294-57, and on the other way, our Western Access Project, like I said, with some of the acquisitions that we've had, we're doing a more of a proactive search to identify what properties may be deemed access. So again, maybe it's more of an opportunity for us to go to the community and say, this could be something in your town. We would still expect every community to pay fair market value, the appraised value of the property, plus all fees and expenses for the appraisals and the plaques, the titles, and whatnot. So these are really the next steps of what we're doing in the land acquisition group for this.
Will you be getting us what property we have? Is that something we could see?
What property we have? We don't plan on doing right now, since we're still in acquisition mode.
Okay.
And we're pretty busy with staff on acquisitions.
Okay.
But what we have targeted is our construction corridor managers for 294-57 and the design corridor managers, so the consultants working for us on those 2 big projects, to start identifying what those excess properties might be within these respective corridors. So right now our primary focus is on these 2 corridors.
I'm just curious. About, you know, when you say some of the big parcels could be economically developed. Just curious. I'm not saying in a particular area. Just curious, like what kind of parcel you're talking about and stuff like that. You know, what they're near. Are they near economic developments already? You know, if you got a parcel right in the heart of a subdivision, I know you don't like being in homes,
mm-hmm.
but it'd be tough to all of a sudden put a commercial development in the heart of a subdivision.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that was just my curiosity on that.
Right.
And they need to be flexible. The fact that I know you're saying you don't like to have residential by there if not necessary, but if you had a heart of a subdivision of nothing but homes, and oh, by the way, now when a guy put a factory in there, it's going to operate 24/7.
If the developer puts up a noise wall, that's terrific.
Yeah,
right, exactly. That helps us out. Just don't stick us with the problem because they wanted to sell some property. The property that we have now, access, it varies in size. There are some that's nuisance property that's in somebody's backyard. We've got some large chunks of land that are available in industrial areas.
Now, when you say large chunks, how are you talking acres?
Acres, multiple acres.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, we have. It really does vary.
You understand? Well, my question, just make sure it's compatible for the use of the area.
Right.
When that comes along, so we want to make sure you protect the interests of the, you know, the area that's surrounded by it.
And that's what, out of the policy, that's what we're looking for, is how will the land be used, what's the public benefit of it, making sure that there is, a clear public benefit. It's not a unilateral decision. This is the information that we staff look for from the requesting agency. Ultimately, it's going to be this board who decides whether or not we want to provide access. What we could try to do when these requests come in, bring it to you for some form of consideration, that'd be great. To explain, here's what's there. Here's
and the compatibility of the proper use. Mm-hmm. For where.
Mm-hmm. So again, we're just trying to provide some clarity on the process as opposed to the one-off side. So that's the plan moving forward. So I would imagine maybe the future customer service and planning committee will start having more of a discussion on this. Any other thoughts, questions? Good.
Thank you very much, Rocco.
Thank you.
Director Johnson, I am informed by our legal team that we would like a motion to adjourn, even though Chairman Schillerstrom is not here. And since he indicated that you could kind of finish up the rest of the meeting for us, you are enabled to call for a motion to adjourn that you and Director Banks can vote on so that we can officially adjourn the meeting.
So if it's a 50-50 vote, then we could sit
then we'll be here for the rest of the afternoon.
I need a, since all business being completed, I need a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
I second. All in favor, or I'm sorry, Christy, you can call the roll.
Sure. Director Banks?
Aye.
Director Johnson?
Aye.
2 yeas, 0 nays?
No.
And
you didn't change.
Need an adjourn.
Thank you.
Now, see.